This is The Record on KUOW with Steve Scherer. I'm Ross Reynolds. Every time you get on an airplane, there's a recorder logging details of the flight. It's the conversation of the pilots, the altitude, the airspeed, the direction it's heading, and more. Of course, it's called the black box. And usually, black box recordings are only needed when something goes wrong during a flight. Joe Janes is a professor at the Information School at the University of Washington. He first became interested in the black box after Malaysia Airlines Flight 370 disappeared on March 8th. That plane is still missing. Janes explored the origins of the black box in the latest episode of his podcast. It's called Documents That Changed the World. Joe, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having me.
So first of all, I associate document with paper. How is a black box a document?
It's an interesting case because in many ways it's a way of making a document. It's a recording device. But of course, when it's needed, when there's an air crash or when there's some incident, then it then becomes the document. And we're used to thinking of the word document as print things, but documents can be audio recordings, documents can be pictures, documents can be textiles, they can be almost anything that sort of does information stuff for us. And in this case, when it's needed, which nobody ever wants, but when it's needed, then it becomes a really critical document.
Joe, who invented the black box and when was that?
Well, it's one of those where there's multiple origin stories, but the best through line is a guy named David Warren, who is an Australian fuel chemist. He's not a mechanical engineer. He's a fuel chemist. Working in the early days of the Aeronautical Research Laboratory in Melbourne, Australia, and he's in some meeting trying to figure out why a jet crashes with about 50 people all going around the table trying to explain it, and he's daydreaming because it's clearly not him. And he thinks about this wire recorder that he saw at an exposition and said, you know, if some businessman had that on the plane and it was recording, maybe we'd be able to figure out what happened to the plane. Was it hijacked? What happened? And then he spent years trying to develop it into a prototype to record what was going on inside the plane.
And when was it first required on planes? Because you have to have it on planes now, don't you?
It's required now on planes of a certain size. On tiny little planes, it's not required. But Australia was the first country to require them in 1964. They became required here in the States a year later. So now they're on every plane of any size and increasingly sophisticated. The earliest ones were very simple, and now the most recent ones on the 787 can record something like 148,000 parameters at any given time.
But as we saw in this Malaysia plane disappearing, they're not infallible. At certain very remote points, they're not going to help you.
Well, you got to find it.
Yeah.
And there have been several. There's another one in the Indian Ocean at roughly the same depth they seem to think the Malaysian airliner is, from a South African airliner's plane that crashed some years ago. There's one apparently in about 60 feet of water in Lake Michigan that they've never found. The ones in that went into the plane into the towers in 9/11 were destroyed, never found. So there's probably at least a dozen and a half or more that have never been found, and so the data can't be recovered.
And if I understand it correctly, it's partly battery life. At some point, it's just going to stop emitting a signal, so it can't be found.
It emits a signal upon impact or when it hits the water, and that we all heard that a few weeks ago when they thought they had the very tail end of it. Battery life is roughly a month. The recording itself is solid state, so that doesn't need power to continue. So they could find it years later, and it would still a modern one, and it would still, assuming it hasn't degraded, they'd be able to get the data.
If they could find it.
If they could find it.
Joe Janes is my guest. He's a professor at the Information School at the University of Washington, and he's fascinated with documents. His most recent podcast about them talked about these black boxes. Are black boxes black?
They're not, at least not by design. They have to be either bright yellow or bright orange. There's a couple stories as about why they're called black. One is that the early ones used photographic film, and so if it was painted black, light wouldn't be able to get through and expose the film by accident. Another potential story is that when they're found, they're often charred and burned, and that's why they're called black. Another story is they're just called black boxes because people think of them as black boxes. Nobody seems to know.
So what we've been able to do since black boxes became common is find out what was going on just before the crash. And how has getting that information changed the way we investigate plane crashes? Has it changed the way that we regulate planes or build planes?
Well, it is now a way to know. It's a way to record the last 2 hours of cockpit voice conversation, so what the pilots are saying and what goes over the intercoms, and depending on the system, the last several hours of what position switches are in and what attitude and altitude and wind speed and all sorts of other things like that. It's one of a number of kinds of evidence that can be used by crash investigators to figure out what happened.
So maybe you can figure out it was pilot error or it was mechanical error. You might be able to sort that out.
It's one piece of evidence that people use, but they use lots of other things as well.
Now, is it only used when there's a plane crash, or are the so-called black boxes used for other things?
The most recent ones, the contemporary ones, can also be used to download data after any given flight about fuel usage or the course of the flight, et cetera. So there is a sort of ongoing use, but you only ever hear about them, of course, during a plane crash or just after a plane crash.
Now, I understand since this Malaysian air flight disappearance and the lengthy search, which appears to not be successful yet, there have been some calls for a different kind of a system, a more reliable system perhaps. How might the so-called black box change in the future, Joe?
Well, actually, there were people who have been talking for years about the idea of streaming data services, so to be able to continually monitor things like flight performance. And people have written about this. One article in Wired magazine a few years ago said they should be glass boxes, not that they should be made of glass, but that they should be transparent and the data should always be being transmitted. Among the many reasons people these kinds of systems aren't any more sophisticated than they are is that in many cases pilots are opposed to it.
Really? Why is that?
Pilots were opposed to cockpit voice recorders in the very beginning because they didn't want to be monitored.
Hmm.
There's also been a movement for many years to put cameras in the cockpits. And pilots are not crazy about that because they don't want to be watched. So there's a lot of inertia in this system. And there's a lot of social pressures that come to play on how this or any other kind of system like this gets implemented.
Now, I think I've read that there are black box-like devices now in some automobiles. Is that true?
Newer automobiles. They're also on ships. They're also on trains. This notion of being able to monitor performance on an ongoing basis, but also during some terrible event, is now fairly commonplace.
Joe Janes, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Joe Janes is the chair of the Master of Library and Information Science. That's at the Information School at the University of Washington. His podcast is called Documents That Changed the World, and one of the recent ones had to do with a black box. You can check it out and find out about a lot of other ones. You are listening to The Record on KUOW 94.9 Public Radio.